Thanks for listening to the teaching podcast of Bridgepoint Church. Stay tuned after the podcast for a short message, but for now, let's jump right in.
Today we are actually wrapping up this series we have been in for over 2 months now, where we are just looking at this idea that if we're going to be the kind of people that God created us to be, if we're going to be His images reflecting His goodness and glory into the world, then it requires that we grow and we reach this mark of spiritual maturity. And the way we've been defining spiritual maturity is that it looks like becoming like Jesus and helping others do the same. And that even in and of itself can be kind of, what does it mean to become like Jesus? And so we identified 5 stages of growth, and we've been looking at these one by one. So we talked about the spiritually unborn, the infant, the child, the young adult. And today we're going to look at the 5th final stage of spiritual growth that we call the spiritual parent. Now, if you're going to be a spiritual parent, this is where we're really focusing on the second half of that definition of spiritual maturity. We're becoming like Jesus, and we're helping others do the same. And really the key word that defines a spiritual parent, I believe, would be the word intentional. A spiritual parent is intentional to help people grow in their relationship. We all know if we're parents, if you're a parent in the room, you're probably intentional with how you're raising your kids and to what kind of media you're exposing them to, is shaping them into the men and women that God created them to be. And in the same way, if we're going to help other people grow to be like Jesus, we're going to have to be very intentional. People don't accidentally stumble into being like Jesus. But I think as this is the 5th and final stage of growth, the least number of people will reach this stage of growth than any other stage. Like the least number of people will be spiritual parents, which actually creates 2 problems. Number one, if I fail to become a spiritual parent, then I'm not reaching spiritual maturity. I'm not becoming who God created me to be. But likewise, all of a sudden now, other people who need spiritual parents become orphans because they don't have people who can help them grow in their faith. Now, this is not an issue just unique to our current culture and context. This is something that throughout history, Christians have been dealing with. In fact, when you look at the early Christian leader, Paul, he writes letters to this community of Jesus followers in the town of Corinth. And if you've ever read these letters, you know there's a lot of dysfunction in Corinth. And so he's writing to address some of the major issues, some of the problems, the infighting, the factions, the people who are wanting power and prestige. And he starts calling all of this out. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 14, he says this: "I'm not writing this to shame you, but to warn you as my dear children. For you may have countless instructors in Christ, but you don't have many fathers. For I became your father in Christ Jesus through the gospel. Therefore, I urge you to imitate me." So what does Paul say? He said, guys, I'm not writing to you. I'm not confronting you because I'm trying to throw shame and condemnation and make you feel like an awful human being. That's not why I'm writing to you. I am writing to you because you have lots of instructors. You have lots of teachers. Some translations say you have thousands and 10,000s of teachers, but you don't have spiritual fathers, and by implication, mothers. What he's saying is you have a lot of biblical teaching. You have a lot of people who are willing to come in and kind of give you some pointers and tell you what the Bible says, but that's not what you need. The reason for the dysfunction is you don't have spiritual parents. Because there's a difference between being a teacher and being a parent, right? Teachers can clock in and clock out, right? Like, do you ever remember as a kid you run into a teacher like at the grocery store? You're like, what are you doing here? Don't you live at the school? Like, you're not supposed to be here. But like when you're a parent, you're around your kids all the time. Even when they leave the house, you don't stop being a parent to them. It's like this full-on thing that you don't clock in and clock out of being a parent. And I think sometimes even when we look at the issues we see in the American church today, whether that's abuse of power, people getting hurt, whether that's people being more loyal to their political parties in the way of Jesus, whatever kind of division or dysfunction we see, it's certainly not because we lack teachers. It's certainly not because we lack conferences or podcasts, or we have more access to good teaching now than maybe at any point in history. That's not why there's dysfunction. We don't need more teaching and conferences and lectures and podcasts. What we need is people who will invest their lives, who will shape us, who will show us how to follow Jesus and then challenge us to do the same. We need spiritual parents. Now, what does a relationship between a spiritual parent and child look like? Well, in the time we have left, I just want to look at the relationship between Paul and Timothy throughout the book of Acts. Because Paul was this early Christian leader who was traveling around and he was telling people about Jesus and starting these communities of faith, but he never went alone. And one of the people that he brought alongside him was this young man named Timothy. Now, as we walk through here, because I know the least number of people reach spiritual parenthood, and on Sundays, I'm trying to speak to people who are in this stage, I want to approach this from two perspectives. Number one, if you're a spiritual parent, I'm going to tell you what does it look like to shepherd your spiritual children. But I also want to speak to those who need spiritual parents. Like, this is the kind of stuff you need to be looking for and the kind of character we need to be developing so we can position ourselves to find a spiritual parent. Does that make sense? So two parts of that. Now, the first time we meet Timothy is going to be in Acts chapter 16, starting in verse 1. That's where we want to jump in this morning. It says, Paul went on to Derbe and Lystra, where there was a disciple named Timothy, the son of a believing Jewish woman, but his father was a Greek. The brothers and sisters at Lystra and Iconium spoke highly of him, and Paul wanted Timothy to go with him. And I love that phrase there. Paul meets Timothy, and then Paul wants Timothy to come with him. And so their relationship starts with an invitation. Really, any relationship between a spiritual parent and a spiritual child is going to start with an invitation. Now, why is Paul so drawn to Timothy? What do we know about Timothy? Well, first, we're told that he's a disciple. He's someone who's already decided to follow Jesus. And by the way, the Bible never distinguishes between someone who follows Jesus and a disciple. It's not like, I'm going to follow Jesus and then I'll become a disciple later. No, you follow Jesus and immediately you are a disciple. And so here's Timothy. He's learning, he's growing, he's trying to follow the way of Jesus. But something about him compels Paul, like draws Paul to him. And I think we get a clue when it says that the people in that area spoke highly of Timothy's reputation. He had a certain character about him that made Paul want to bring him in as his spiritual son. And so what kind of character should we look for? I mean, that's like an endless number of possibilities, but I just want to give a few thoughts this morning. What character should we look like in spiritual children? And if you need a spiritual parent, this is the kind of character we want to develop in our lives. What I always tell my team is we want to look for fat people. All right, now that's an acronym, okay, for faithful, available, and teachable. All right, so let me walk through those things. See, if you're looking for somebody to disciple or if you're trying to develop this character, it starts with being faithful, right? Timothy was a disciple. He was already faithfully following Jesus. And listen, any kind of relationship, especially between a father and a son, a parent, a child, that's going to have its ups and downs. But we have to see someone who's willing to be faithful and stick it out for the long run. Because how many of us know that when God grows us, he grows us in the crock pot, not the instant pot. It's going to take some time. I wish that like we could wake up tomorrow and boom, we would all just look like Jesus. That would make following him so much easier. But the reality is it's a long process and it requires that we're faithful. Like if you want to get healthy and get in shape, you can't just go on a diet for a week and lose 100 pounds. No, it's this faithfulness in the same way. We have to be faithful following Jesus. You don't just want someone who's faithful, but that available part is key as well. Because I've noticed there's a lot of people who are like, I want a spiritual father. I need somebody to mentor me and disciple me in the way of Jesus. But I'm really busy right now, you know, between all the kids' activities and stuff going on at work, and we have these trips coming up, and we in our mind, we want to be discipled, but we're not making ourselves available. There's no relational space for us to have time to be discipled. We have to find people who are available. And by the way, there's a good available and a bad available. Some people are available because, they don't really have anything going on. But we want to be the kind of people who make ourselves available for the important things in life. It's really about priority. If it's important to you, you will make time for it. And if it's important for you to be discipled, you will make yourself available for it. And then the third part of that is that teachable thing. Because how many of us know when you're a parent, you have to teach your kids some things? And how many of us know sometimes our kids don't want to be taught some things? I think like the favorite phrase in our house right now is, I know, Dad, right? Like they don't want you to teach it, but we still have to teach them. And you're looking for somebody who's willing to receive feedback and then apply it in their life. And by the way, again, if you're looking for someone to be a spiritual parent to you, are you teachable? So I will tell you the number one way to drive a spiritual parent away is for them to try to help you and you just keep pushing them away. I'm not going to do the things you've asked me to do. It requires a certain level of humility. Now, it may surprise you, but in a church our size, it's not uncommon for me to receive feedback from people time after time. And what I have learned, one thing that's helpful for me, because I'll tell you, I don't like being corrected. I'm a perfectionist. And so my gut instinct is to like defend myself, to blame somebody else, to complain. Like that's my gut instinct. So when somebody gives me feedback, I have this discipline where I just listen. I receive. I'm not going to agree or disagree. I just say, hey, can I sit with that? Can I think about that for a little bit? I'm going to let my emotions calm down, and then I'm going to think back through. And more often than not, there's a lot of truth in the feedback I get, whether I like the way it was shared or not. But if we're going to be teachable, we'll receive that. And that doesn't mean everything everybody says about us. We have to take it to heart. But we receive what we can so we can continue to grow. This is the kind of character we want to develop. That's what we're looking for in people that we want to disciple. But after the invitation, and by the way, when I talk this morning, I'm going to give us like four things to think about. These are not necessarily sequential stages. These are all happening at the same time. Because after the invitation, then Paul goes into a time of coaching. And I really wrestled with what phraseology to use today to try to make it more understandable for us. When I talk about coaching, I mean like really some difficult stuff, right? We're still on that teachable thing. We need people in our lives who are going to tell us some things that maybe we don't want to hear. Coaching isn't always fun. In fact, I know we're in the middle of football season right now, and so that's, you know, my favorite time of year. And when you turn on your TV, oftentimes you're going to see somebody like this. You ever see this guy on TV? He's yelling, he's screaming. Of course he's a Cowboys fan, right? They're never happy about anything. I don't even know there's Cowboys fans here. That was not planned. I apologize. Yelling, screaming. Now, when these people are yelling and screaming, do the players adjust their behavior for this guy? No, absolutely not. Now, there's another person who screams who looks like this. Now, when he screams at the players, do they adjust their behavior? Now, what's the difference? There's two screaming men. One of them's a critic and one of them's a coach. See, a critic complains because they want to feel better. A coach complains because he wants to make you better. And so we need to invite people in our lives. Listen, sometimes I'm sure that that player getting reamed out by Nick Saban was not like thinking, I am so happy right now. Like, this is just exactly why I came to Alabama, you know? But the reality is we need people who will confront us with some hard things, who will challenge us to take steps that we don't want to take, to do things that we're not comfortable doing, who will push us out of our comfort zone. This is exactly what Paul does for Timothy. Look at the second half of verse 3. Acts chapter 16 says, so he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, since they all knew his father was a Greek. Now stay with me here, because there's a number of different ways this could go, and some of them are kind of weird. All right, but understand this. What did we learn about Timothy? Timothy's mom was Jewish, and she followed Jesus. So he was Jewish by heritage. Jewish people trace their heritage through the mom's family line. Now his dad was a Greek. Part of being Jewish was getting circumcised, but likely because his dad was not Jewish, he did not want his son to identify with the Jewish people, so he did not have him circumcised. Paul's ministry, this is his whole pattern for ministry. He goes into a town, he walks into the synagogue, he tells Jewish people about Jesus. As some of them start to follow him, he goes outside of the synagogue, he tells Gentiles or non-Jewish people about Jesus. Then he gets these people who are like very opposed to one another, puts them into a church, and then he leaves town and does the same thing in the next town. That's why he's always writing letters back. They're always arguing about the same stuff over and over and over again. And Paul knows, in my ministry, I'm going to have to go into the synagogue. Timothy cannot go into the synagogue until he is circumcised. And so he's going to ask him to do a very big step in order to pursue his ministry. Now, I want to make it very clear. Paul does not say, if you're going to follow Jesus, then you have to be circumcised. In fact, he talks about that oddly a lot in the New Testament. This is not a salvation issue. This is, Timothy, if you're going to join me in my ministry, there's some difficult things you're going to have to do. And again, I don't think Timothy was like, yeah, you know, I was thinking about getting circumcised the other day. I guess I should go ahead and do it, you know? I'm sure this required, number one, it required Paul to have the courage to have this conversation. He was going to have to, I think sometimes as parents, we're afraid to have difficult conversations because we don't want to offend anybody or upset anybody. But sometimes we have to love people enough to tell them the hard things that they may not want to hear. But then along with that, Timothy had to be willing to receive this kind of coaching. And he had to take that step, which he does. And then he follows Paul in his ministry. So we've talked about the fact there's an invitation. All right. Then there's a season of coaching. Now at the same time, then we'll get to the third thing, which is now Paul is training Timothy. So that's where I'm trying to distinguish between coaching and training. Coaching is telling you some hard things. Training is when we're like actually equipping people to actually go out and disciple other people as well. And so we're going to see this if you flip over to Acts chapter 17. Acts chapter 17. I think they're working on something back there. This is why, just bring your Bible to church. Then you don't have to rely on the screen, all right? Acts 17, verse 1. After they passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica. Let's go. I said all those words right. I practiced it all week. Whew. All right. All right. I'm not going to start over. Okay. Where there was a Jewish synagogue, right? That's his pattern. As usual, Paul went into the synagogue and on three Sabbath days reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining and proving that it was necessary for the Messiah to suffer and rise from the dead. This Jesus I am proclaiming to you is the Messiah. And he goes on from there. So what does training look like? I'm going to give you three E words to expand on. It's a fourth E word there, right? On training. The first one is Paul provided an example. So Paul didn't immediately say, all right, Timothy, go in that synagogue and start teaching. Paul actually walked in and he kept his normal rhythm, his normal pattern. And see, I think what people really need in a spiritual parent, again, is not always a lot of instruction, a lot of Bible teaching. They need to see what it looks like to follow Jesus as a husband. They need to see what it looks like to follow Jesus as a mom. They need to see what it looks like to follow Jesus as a middle schooler or a high schooler or somebody who's going to work. Because you know what? Discipleship is more caught than taught. Like, we can teach people a lot of things, but how many of us know you can tell your kids a lot of things, but what they're actually going to do is imitate your actions, not do your words. Jesus spent 24/7 with his disciples for 3 years. And I imagine, like John tells us, there's so much more that Jesus did. Like, we couldn't even put it all in a book if we tried. You can read the four gospel accounts in less than a day. Like, that's 3 years of Jesus' ministry compressed down pretty far. But I imagine that there were times where Jesus and his disciples laughed and joked together. I imagine there were times where he performed some miracles we don't know about, or he gave some teaching that we have not yet heard. And I imagine through all of that, that they're looking at Jesus as his example, not just his teaching, to see this is what it looks like to follow him. Now, not only do we need an example, but the second step then is Paul actually empowered Timothy. He didn't just say, hey, here's my example, but there came a point where he's going to kind of push him out of the nest and say, it's your turn. So as you read on in the next few verses in Acts chapter 17, what we discover is Paul is known for causing some trouble sometimes when he heads into these towns. And there was a group of Jewish people that got really upset at him. They wanted to kill him. So they run him out of one town. They find out he's in the next town. They want to run him out of that town too. So they're actually coming after Paul. So I want to jump down to verse 14. It says, then the brothers and sisters immediately sent Paul away to go to the coast. So they know they're coming for Paul. And they're like, you got to get out of here. We got to save your life. They send Paul away to the coast. But Silas and Timothy stayed on there. Those who escorted Paul brought him as far as Athens, and that's not Athens, Georgia, by the way. And after receiving instructions for Silas and Timothy to come to him as quickly as possible, they departed. So Paul has to leave town, but he doesn't take Timothy with him. He leaves him behind. He says, Timothy, I'm empowering you now to continue the work of ministry. I'm like letting you do this. By the way, Timothy's not like 10 years in to following Paul. This is pretty quickly Paul's pushing him out there. And I think that one of the mistakes we make in the church is we like take forever to push people and empower them for ministry. If you've been following along in our devotionals, I used this example a couple of weeks ago. But it actually, if you think about it, it is mind-boggling the process of getting your driver's license in the state of Georgia. Because when you turn 15, you read some stuff online. You take a written test. You don't even have to prove you know how to turn a car on. You just take a written test that you know the signs, and they give you a learner's permit so you can get behind the wheel of a 2,000-pound vehicle traveling 60 miles an hour down the road. And if we can be empowered to drive a car that easily, why do we make it so difficult for people to be empowered for ministry? Why do we make you got to come to church for a year before you can serve anywhere, and then you got to serve faithfully before we can empower you into any leadership position? Listen, I think the church ought to be a place we have a bias towards action. Push people, empower them. That's the only way they're going to learn. And notice here, it's not like Paul said, Timothy, I'm leaving you here and I'll be back in a few years. No, he said, I'm going to leave you here, and then as quickly as you get done, come back. We will assess. We will walk through this together. He's not commissioning him. He's not sending him out yet. It's all a part of this training. I'm going to empower you, and then I'm going to bring you back, and we're going to talk through this. Now, the last thing he does, he doesn't just empower him. He also encourages Timothy. Encouragement has to be a part of what a spiritual parent does. In fact, if you look throughout the New Testament, there's like a million verses we could have looked at where he's like, you know what? Timothy is the only one who's been faithful. I'm sending Timothy to you because I trust him more than anybody else. He's my son. Like this is somebody that you ought to be following. He's constantly encouraging Timothy. And I think that that's an underrated part of discipleship because we all need to be encouraged. In fact, sometimes we love the coaching part and we're not good at the encouraging part. And something that really flipped a switch for me several years ago is thinking of encouraging as relational deposits and coaching as relational withdrawals. And if you're not making any deposits and all you're doing is making withdrawals, what happens? You're going to overdraft your account. And some of you are wondering, well, I don't have anybody around I can disciple. It's because all you're doing is coaching. You're never encouraging. We ought to be the kind of people who are constantly pointing out all the great ways we see God working and moving in somebody's life. I mean, this analogy of spiritual growth, like think about a spiritual infant or child. Think about your own infant or child. You ever see like a toddler taking their first steps? Like every toddler is like a human bobblehead. Their head's like 8 times the size of their body. And so they start to take their first steps and they 1, 2, 3, boom, hit the ground. And you know what parents never do? They say, you're so stupid. You only took 3 steps. What an idiot. We would never say no. We're like, good job. You took 3 steps. Let's get back up. Let's try it again. And yet when it comes to following Jesus, somebody who's a spiritual infant or a child stumbles and falls, and we're quick to write them off. We're quick to criticize them. We're quick to throw them under the bus, and we want to cast them off. And I wonder if really the key for a lot of spiritual growth is we just need more people to encourage us. We need people to say, yes, you fell down. I understand. Let's get back up. Let's take another step. You can do this. I'm going to hold your hand. We're going to walk through this together. We have to be a people who encourage. Encouraging is a huge part of training people to disciple others. And so we've talked about training, talked about coaching, the invitation. But at a certain point, Paul did release Timothy for ministry. Now, we've talked about Paul traveling around. One particular town where he helped form this Jesus follower community is the town of Ephesus. And Ephesus was known for a lot of things. It was a big port city, a big cultural city. It was the hub for a lot of pagan worship. And that's not derogatory. That's like there's just a lot of the pagan gods that were worshipped in Ephesus. And because of that, as this young Christian community is growing, there's a lot of people who come in with their ideas of what it looks like to follow Jesus. You have a lot of people who come in who want to use Jesus for their own platform, their own fame, and they're coming into the church. So Paul doesn't just write a letter. He does write a letter to them. But you know what else he does? He sends Timothy. And he installs Timothy as a pastor or elder of that church to lead them. And then when you read 1 and 2 Timothy, Paul is writing to Timothy to encourage this young pastor who's trying to hold this church together. In fact, I imagine that when Timothy heard he was going to Ephesus, he was just about as excited as he was when he heard he was going to have to get circumcised. Right? Like, he knows this is a tough assignment. And so when you read 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 2, it says this, to Timothy, my true son in the faith. Like, do you hear the heart he has for Timothy? Grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and Christ Jesus our Lord. As I urged you when I went to Macedonia, remain in Ephesus so that you may instruct certain people not to teach false doctrine. And he goes on from there. It's like, Timothy, you're my son. I've released you. You're now a spiritual parent to other people. But you hear him encouraging there? He's like, I know you're going to be tempted to walk away. Just remain. Stay faithful. Be as faithful now as you have been to me throughout our ministry. Like, stay there and do the hard work of ministry. So you see, Timothy has now been released. And by the way, this is where we get into this idea of spiritual heritage. Because Paul releases Timothy, and he's going to serve at Ephesus for some time. Does Paul stop being a spiritual father to Timothy? No. Do you stop being a parent just because your kids go to college or get married or move somewhere else? I still, if I need help with something around the house, I'm calling my dad to this day, like, hey, how do we do this again? He'll walk me through that. Like we never stop being a parent. Paul never stops parenting Timothy, but the dynamic does change. And the reality is, it's a beautiful picture then, because now Paul isn't just Timothy's spiritual father. He becomes a spiritual grandfather to everybody who's in that Jesus-following community in Ephesus. And then he'll be a great-grandfather and a great-great-grandfather. This is how discipleship movements start. This whole idea, we need to shift our mindset from an inheritance mindset to a legacy mindset. Because an inheritance is what we leave behind for somebody. A legacy is what we leave behind in somebody. Listen, I'm all for, like, listen, where I told you a couple weeks ago, I've been going through a little bit of a midlife crisis, wrestling with my mortality. And so we're trying to get things in order, make sure if anything were to happen to me or my wife, like our kids are taken care of. There is nothing wrong with leaving an inheritance behind. But an inheritance mindset says, let me focus so I can just leave this stuff behind. A legacy mindset says, let me focus on the people around me so that I'm shaping and changing their character so that they become more like Jesus and help other people become more like Jesus and help other people become more like Jesus. I've been trying every week not to spoil what's in the devotionals, but there's one this week. You're going to get to it, I think, on Thursday. I'm going to spoil a little bit because if you're not following the devotionals, I think this is just a good analogy. But if I were to ask you, how many people here know Easter Hicks? I'd be surprised if any of you ever raised your hand, because Easter was not someone who was famous or wealthy. In fact, by the time she ended her, her life came to a close, she was living in Rainesville, Alabama, which is smaller than Cherokee High School. So just small town. But here's the beautiful thing. Easter was my dad's babysitter when he was a kid. And because of that relationship, my grandparents started following Jesus because of her. And because they were following Jesus, my dad decided to follow Jesus. And because my dad was a faithful Jesus follower, he raised me in a home, so I made the decision to follow Jesus. And now we're trying to raise our kids in a home so they would follow Jesus. And I'm even standing in front of you helping you follow Jesus today. So a woman that you've never heard of, who did not leave an inheritance behind, has a huge legacy with people that she never met and that you have no idea even who she is. That's what a spiritual legacy looks like. And when we become spiritual parents, when we release people to become disciples, you have not made a disciple until they have made a disciple. When we release them, all of a sudden, we're not just leaving inheritance, we're leaving a legacy. That's how heaven comes to earth. That's how people become more like Jesus. Now, I have a few minutes. It is time for Q&A, so I'm going to throw it open to text questions first. For a spiritual child, what does it look like to be faithful? Does it mean doing everything right? I sure hope it doesn't mean doing everything right. To be faithful doesn't mean perfection. It does imply progress. So we're all going to stumble and make mistakes, but if it's the same mistake over and over and over again, if it's pornography for 10 years in a row, if it's materialism and vanity and you don't even notice that that's an issue in your life, That's not being faithful. Being faithful is, yes, there are areas in my life that need to change. Working in ways we can to help address those, and then allowing Jesus to continue to work and to shape and to change us. Fantastic question. Does anybody else have a question? You can raise your hand. I will try my best. It's a little dark in here, but if you raise your hand, no. I won't call on anybody. That's fine. All right. Last thing. We are at the end of the series we've been in for almost 2 months. And my biggest fear is that you're going to get to the end of this week, you'll wrap up your devotionals, you will be in your life group, and you'll close the book, and you'll say, wow, wasn't that a great series? What's next? And just move on. The reality is, we've gone through this whole series because I'm trying to give you a roadmap. I hope that at this point, you're able to look back at the unborn, the infant, the child, the young adult, the parent, and you would be able to pinpoint where you are. And I actually have this working theory, and I said if I was going to do this series over again, this is what I would change. I am going to guess that for most people, at the end of the series, you are one stage behind where you thought you were at the beginning of the series. And listen, by the way, that's not a bad thing, because it's very important for us to know where we are so that we can know where we need to get to. And not only are we showing you where to go, we've given very practical steps for you to take. So my biggest hope for this series is that, number one, you would know where you are and that you would have a next step for your own growth. But number two, I hope that you would find somebody else in your life and you would help them take a next step. Because you don't have to be a spiritual parent to help somebody else grow. If you're a child, you can help someone who's an infant. If you're a young adult, you can help someone who's spiritually unborn. It's just find people, and we've given you this handbook. And I want you to continue to look every day through the lens of where am I, where do I need to go, and how am I going to get there? Now, when it specifically relates to what we talked about today, there's two things. The first one is this: for the vast majority of people in this room, I want you to find a parent. I want you to find a spiritual parent who can speak into your life. Now listen, I in a perfect world, spiritual parents would just be speaking out or seeking out children. We don't live in an ideal world. And so sometimes it is going to put the initiative on the people in the younger stages of faith to find a spiritual parent. And in just a moment, we're going to have our time of response with communion. Our prayer stations will be open. And during that time, I want you to pray, God, would you open my eyes? Is there somebody in my life that's supposed to be a spiritual parent to me? And I hope that God just puts that right on your heart in that moment. He may not. And if he doesn't, then what I want you to do is commit to building that kind of character so that when your spiritual parent walks in the room, they find someone who's faithful. They find someone who's available. They find someone who's teachable and humble and hungry to grow. But I think there's a select few people in this room that your next step is to be a parent. Some of you, you're teetering right on that edge. You're that young adult, and you're starting to be outward focused. But listen, I know it's hard to be a parent. It's hard. Because sometimes you're going to have these great moments of exhilaration, and you're parenting somebody, and they finally get it clicks, and you see them start to grow. And then there will be moments when some life change will happen. They will revert inwards, and it feels like they've taken 10 steps backwards. There's going to be days where you're excited and days you're ready to throw in the towel. But we have so many orphan children, and they need a parent. They need someone who will say, you know what? I'm going to prioritize you over myself. In fact, I was speaking to our dream teamers before first service. Our memory verse for this week, I'm awful at memory verses, but I did memorize this one for this past week. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, consider others as more important than yourself. I've been saying that every day this week. And the more that I say it, the more often I'm aware of how oftentimes I treat others like I'm more important. Yeah, I could help you, but that's going to cut in on my personal time. Yeah, I would serve you, but they're kind of weird. Yeah, I would do that, but you don't understand what the cost to me is. And the reality is, if we're going to be a parent, we finally have to consider others as more important. Can I just tell you, we're a church of, you know, if it's a great Sunday, we got like 200 people here, like we're busting the seams, we're feeling good. That is too many people for me to be a spiritual father to on my own. That's too many people for the rest of our staff. Julie, Amanda, Griggs, Tyler, like we cannot handle this on our own. There's too many people who need a spiritual parent, and we need people who are willing to step up, to take that step, to bring people under their wing, to train them up, to release them to disciple other people. We got a lot of orphan children. We don't have a lot of parents. And for some of you, the prayer that you need to pray today is boldness and courage to consider others as more important than yourself so you could be a parent to somebody in need. So all across this room, I'd love, just bow your head and close your eyes with me. Jesus, we're thankful for what you've done in our lives over the last couple of months through Sunday mornings and our groups and devotionals. I pray that you would not stop challenging us with this stuff just because the series is coming to an end, but that you would constantly be challenging us. Your spirit would be putting its finger on things in our life that we need to surrender, that we need to lay down. I pray for each and every spiritual infant, child, young adult in this room, that right now in this moment, you would just put on their heart someone who would be a spiritual parent to them. And I pray for those who are right there on the edge who need to be a parent, that you would give them the boldness and the strength and the courage to step up and to say, I'll do it. And that we would become a community of faith where people are growing, encouraging, and every day becoming more like you. It's in your name I pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Bridgepoint Church Podcast. I hope we've shared something meaningful for you wherever you're at in your spiritual journey. Just so you know a little bit more about us, we meet on Sunday mornings in downtown Woodstock, but we also meet during the week in what we call life groups, and that's where the really good stuff happens for us. If you're becoming a regular listener of this podcast, we'd like to invite you to make it relational, just like we do during the week. Grab a Bible, invite some friends to join you, and turn this into a conversation. If you're already a regular listener and would like to support this ministry financially, you can do so by visiting us online at bpc.life and choosing the giving option that works best for you. Thanks again for listening.